Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily lives. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Welcome to Quiet Life. I'm Ruth. It's really, really good to be with you on this first day of April 2020. Well, there you go, April Fool's Day. Happy April Fool's. I would do an April Fool's joke, but I'm pretty bad at them, so I'll leave it to the one that I shared on Facebook today was from Citywide Baptist Church, where Matt, the pastor, said that he was going around in a bus now, preaching from the bus because of social isolation and collecting donations, and the more you donate, the shorter his sermon would go for. Thought it was quite funny. Anyway, it did say at the bottom, this is fake news. I like April Fool's Day jokes that don't hurt anyone. So today's episode is episode 60, and I'm going to be reading chapter 6 from My Year of Saying No. And I hope that you're enjoying that process with me, the process of recording the audiobook, which is taking me some time. Today's reading is from the month of April in that book. And here we are in April while I'm reading it, which is quite funny. But this April is very different from that April, and you'll hear my, you know, it was a busy month, couple of weddings, blah, blah, blah. But not this year, not this year. Things have changed quite a bit. But what hasn't changed for me, I think, is the complicatedness of my life. So I work from home, so my work hasn't really changed a whole lot. It's not as much work as I've had before, but it's still going. But as well as work, I'm doing a lot of checking in on people, and I'm sure you are too, you know, ringing relatives and chatting to people on Facebook and checking in on people and watching the news and doing all that kind of thing. And I realised as I was reading the book about setting a time budget that I probably need to set a time budget again for this time now and think, okay, how much time am I going to put aside for this and that. One of the things about working from home that really helps is to have some sort of schedule, have some sort of time set aside for things. And one of the things that helps you keep a schedule is to be accountable to somebody else. So when things were normal, one of the things that I would do is go to St. Luke's Doona, and I've talked about this before, and I have a writing group, and we sit down together and write for a couple of hours on a Tuesday afternoon. Well, we can't sit down together and write. And last Tuesday, even though I knew it was creative space time, I didn't set aside that time. I did a few errands. I, you know, did a few jobs, went, posted something, I think, or picked up some groceries or, you know, something like that, and realized that I could have done that at another time of the day, and that I really needed to do something about keeping that Tuesday afternoon sacred for what it was supposed to be used for. So what I ended up doing is starting a Facebook group, which is, if you want to join, is on the St. Luke's Taruna Facebook page, and it's a group called Writing Creative Space. And we being those people that I invited who are normally part of the creative space, get together online or get together separately at home in our own, you know, it's a very introverted get together like it always has been, but we dedicate that time, that normal Tuesday afternoon, to writing together. And just knowing that there were a couple of other people doing the same thing helped me yesterday, and I actually did spend the whole 2 hours writing, and it was fantastic. I mean, it was uplifting for my spirits to be writing, and it was just so nice to be checking in with people as well and checking how each of us are doing. And the extra fun bit was that there are people who I am friends with who can't come to Creative Space because, well, one of them lives in Victoria for starters and for various reasons, but they can be part of this online Creative Space Facebook group. So that was really cool to have them checking in with us and writing at the same time as well. So, yeah, it's an interesting time. But yeah, there's pluses as well as minuses in this time, isn't there? I mean, as we look after each other and stay connected, that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So I hope that this podcast is a time when you're feeling a bit connected and a bit joined in on my rambling conversation. Yes, so this rambling introduction has rambled all over the place, but I encourage you to set your own schedule, what you're going to spend time doing, when you're going to, you know, exercise, work, check in on people, watch the news, whatever else is involved in your day, playing board games, whatever, and help yourself stay accountable by keeping yourself accountable to someone. And if I am that person that you want to be accountable to, then please go ahead, send me a message, write me an email, find me on Facebook, tweet me, whatever you want to do. Let's keep each other accountable to our time schedules and make this time productive, because I think we can spend this time in some sort of horrible panicky state where we're just overwhelmed and not getting anything done. And I think maybe if we set a time budget and set ourselves a schedule, we can be productive and useful during this time. One of the things that we should be setting time, I'm using the should word that I was upset about last fortnight, but one of the good things that we can spend time doing in this time, obviously, is praying, and anyone can do that from wherever they are. And so, yeah, it's good to set ourselves a budget. And if you're not like me and you're not feeling more busy during this time, but you're feeling bored or that your life has just been simpler because everything's been cut out of it, then maybe this time is a good time for reflection where you can look at your time budget and get it ready for when things do come back to something approximating normal. So think about what's important to you. Think about how much time you'll spend on different activities. And I just wonder, is there something that's cut out of your life now because of this isolation period that you're not missing at all? You know, I'm sure there's lots of things that you are missing, but maybe there's something you're not missing at all, and you need to think about whether you actually want that back in your life once things come back. So all sorts of questions. I would love to hear from you. Yeah, drop me a line on Facebook, Ruth Amos Author, or find me on Twitter at A Quiet Life, or send me an email, ruth@ruthamos.com.au, and let's have one of these wonderful online conversations. So anyway, I shall stop chatting now, and I will let you listen to the chapter from My Year of Saying No. April. April was another full month with two weddings, Easter, and a couple of trips to Launceston to do some teaching at university up there. I even got to the point where I was thinking of having a break from writing. I was done in. But then we took a holiday. Moz and I spent a week away, completely away. We travelled to Canberra to spend time with Jess. We spent some time just driving around by ourselves. We got away from the state of Tasmania, and I could figuratively feel the rope snapping as the plane took off. I discovered I didn't want to take even one full day away from writing. And after the week, I felt rested and rearing to go. That feeling lasted about a week, but it gave me hope that if I could get things right, I could feel energetic again. I just need to do more of what I love and less of what I like. More energy-giving activities and less energy-draining activities. I need to get the balance right. Chapter 6. Time is like money. I was talking with my friend Sarah one evening about how difficult it was to say no to worthwhile activities, and she gave me a very good piece of advice. Time is like money, she said. Now, we've all heard time is money, that we need to make sure we're using our time to make money, or that the use of our time is worth money, but that's not what she was saying. Instead, she was saying that just like we need to budget our money, we also need to budget our time. Sarah and I had both worked through an excellent budgeting book, The Complete Cheapskate by Mary Hunt, and we both approach our money management in the same way. Mary suggests giving away at least 10% of your income first, then saving at least 10% for the future, then some money is put in a separate account for bills and such that you know are coming up, some is put aside to treat ourselves, and the rest is spent on food, etc. She's also very clear about getting out of debt as soon as is humanly possible. Sarah was saying to me that in the same way that I know I can't give to every good cause, I can also not give my time to every worthwhile activity. I need to choose my activities and stand by my choice. The other day I met with my friend Megan for coffee in the city. I wasn't exactly running late, but I was on a tight schedule and I was eager to spend as much time with my friend as possible. As I turned the corner to the door of the coffee shop, I was accosted by a very friendly man with a large smile and a grey beanie. It was winter in Tasmania. It was cold. "Hi, nice to meet you," he said with great enthusiasm, and shook my hand and gave me his name and asked for mine. My heart sank. I knew what was coming. I don't like to ignore people and just walk on, especially when they give me a warm and genuine smile. It is just rude to completely blank them, and I find it impossible. But sometimes I wish I could. He was a charity mugger. You know, one of those people from a non-profit organisation who is out on the street and wants not a donation, but a commitment of just $40 a month, less than a coffee a day. What do you do in that situation? The needs in this world are huge, and if you are reading this on an e-book reader, or even in hard copy, you are probably one of the privileged few. I love my cup of coffee a day. I would find it hard to give that up for any charity. I need to provide for my own family, pay my own bills, save for my future, and I also want to put aside some money to follow my dreams. In one way, I would like to give every cent that I have to help a child climb out of poverty and to help a girl escape child marriage. This is what the guy in the beanie was about. And to help a woman in a developing nation start her own business and to boost medical research. The list goes on and on. The number of charities in Australia is doubling every decade. Pro Bono Australia counted 56,894 charities in Australia in 2016. We can't give to them all. What are we to do? One of my major breakthroughs when thinking about this issue was to realise that it's not my responsibility to solve every problem in the world. I can't get my head around how many people there are in the world. There are so many people. My brain can handle the thought of 10, 100, 1,000 people. I have at least 1,000 people that I know personally. I think I can almost hold that number of faces, personalities in my head. After that, it gets fuzzy. When I'm driving home of an evening, I look at all the cars and realise that each person in each car is a personality with their own dreams and trials and families, hurts and loves. I tell you, it spins me out a little. If I gave every cent of my own money to charity, it wouldn't help that much. But if everyone in the developed world gave a little of their money to these charities, then we could do a lot to make the world a better place. The charity muggers are doing an important job if they get someone who is not giving to start giving. It's a numbers game. Let me tell you what I decided to do, not to blow my own trumpet, but to maybe help you to make your own decisions. I decided how much of my income I was going to give away. I've decided that 10% of my gross income is a good way to go. I've heard of someone who lives off 10% and gives away 90%, and to be honest, I'd like to get there one day, but 10% is a good place to start. Sometimes I give a little more out of my savings, especially when I feel like money is getting a hold on me. Giving is an excellent way to combat both greed and fear that God won't provide, but that's another story. Once I had decided how much I was going to give, I looked at my personal values and found a number of organisations that suited my values. I'm going to give you a general idea of my giving. Again, not to blow my own trumpet, but so that you can hopefully use it to make your own list. I give to local and to international mission. I sponsor some children in the developing world. I give to a non-profit that supports victims of child abuse and one that supports research into cancer. And I support my local church. That's it. I made the decision thoughtfully and prayerfully. I took my time over it, and I revisit it occasionally when I have time and brain space. But for most of the time, the decision is made. So what did I do when the friendly man in the beanie attacked me with his very worthy cause? I said no. At first, and this turned out to be not a good idea, I tried to tell him that I gave already to 5 charities. Yes, I forgot some. And that I had made my decision. But he was having none of it. "That's great! You're just the kind of person I want to talk to. If you give to 5, why not 6? He said. Then I realised that I didn't need to justify to him or to anyone why I was not giving to his particular charity, worthy though it might be. His charity was an SEP, someone else's problem. I have decided where I'm going to give, and that's the end of the story. I'm sure he gets knocked back all the time, and that he can deal with it. The person I have to live with is me. When I was trying to make each decision about giving on the spur of the moment, I was pushed around by my own emotions, my guilt, my compassion. It was not pretty. I'm very sure that God doesn't want us living under a cloud of condemnation all the time. In fact, he says so. There is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. I don't need to feel guilty because I can't solve the world's problems. Solving the world's problems is not my job. Giving is excellent. Giving is my job. Giving is good for me, it's good for each of us, and it is good for the world. Let's make a decision about how much we will give and where we will give, and then give. But let's not get hung up on feeling guilty that we can't be the saviour of the world. Now, how did I transfer this idea to my time management? I needed to approach my time the same way that I sorted out the giving of my money. First, I figured out how much time I was prepared to give away to other people's important activities. At the time of writing this, I was working 4 days a week, and work obviously limits the amount of time I am able to give. It cuts a massive chunk out of my time budget, in the same way that the mortgage repayment cuts a chunk out of the money budget. Once I figured out how much time I have to give, it might be 2 activities a fortnight or 3 a month. Then I can say yes to those activities within that budget that suit my personality. But once I've used up that time, then I need to say no. I can't say yes to all the worthwhile things that are happening. I don't have that much time in my budget. Somehow I need to make a decision that's in keeping with my personality and values and only say yes to a few things. Other people can make up the shortfall. One recent activity where I had to say no was a Mother's Day high tea at church. It was run by our women's ministry team, and I felt especially pressured, by myself, not by anyone else, to say yes because I had led our church service the week before and had made the announcement about the high tea. It's very hard to say, "Do come to this excellent activity," with any form of sincerity when you're pretty sure you won't be going yourself. But I had had a huge week that week. I had led church, travelled to Launceston, about 3 hours away, and given 2 days of teaching at the university campus there, staying overnight to do so, and had a couple of coffee dates with various people, as well as my normal workload. I knew I would be tired, and I knew, as an introvert, that this high tea, while pleasant, would be exhausting. I decided not to go, and removed the entry from my calendar. I felt guilty. It was a great cause. Days for Girls was being supported by this event. And I also wanted to support the amazing women who make up our women's ministry team, but my time budget was too stretched, and I needed to be at home, pottering around, grocery shopping, washing things, reading books. It turned out that 180 women attended the high tea. They were in no way affected by me not going. I must have done a wonderful job advertising it in the church notices. No, I'm kidding. It was nothing to do with me at all, but it was a really excellent result. It is just as stupid to blame myself for the success or failure of an activity due to my not turning up, as it would be to blame myself for a charity going under because my $40 a month was not going into their account. I cannot give my time to every worthwhile activity, and I shouldn't be trying. I need to budget time to give regularly and save some time and energy up my sleeve for special occasions that might pop up. One of the things I love to spend my time on is coffee with people. I love one-on-one time with people. Deep conversation, time for encouragement, and I also love coffee. When I am with those who don't drink coffee, I allow them, grin, to drink tea or hot chocolate. The choice of hot beverage is not really important, but the time is. I like having coffee with people because coffee generally lasts an hour. Lunch can take up more than an hour, up to 2 hours even, and dinner is so open-ended it scares me, but coffee is a good short time when you can have a great conversation and then get back to whatever you're doing. If I could, I'd have coffee with someone every day. But I've realised lately that even the 1 hour coffee was putting a strain on my time budget, much the same way that buying your lunch every day can put a strain on your money budget. It all adds up. I now limit my coffee time. I give a coffee to each of my parents each week, and I have allowed myself 2 more coffees each week, but no more. This meant that when a friend came to me at church and asked if we could get together because she had something exciting to tell me, I had to put her off for 3 weeks. That felt really bad. And it also meant that my husband found out the exciting thing before I did because it came up in a church meeting that he went to. He was very good and didn't tell me anything, and it does show that there are consequences to our actions. But that's by the by. So yes, it felt bad to put her off, but it meant that when we did finally get together, I was not exhausted. I was happy and eager to hear her news, and we had time to deeply share and pray about it, instead of me being rushed and needing to get back to work. Saving money is really hard. I mean really saving for the future, not for a holiday or for next week or for the next time that we run out and need to buy something, but for the long-term future. It's hard. I find it hard. But it's necessary. It's a good thing to do. It's good stewardship, delayed gratification, healthy and wise. In the same way, I need to put aside time to rejuvenate myself. This is time where I have nothing booked, time just to be, time to invest in myself and my energy so that I have energy in the future. It's difficult to block out time for this because it doesn't have a label attached to it. It's not exercise or doing something for someone or cleaning the house or working. It's rest time. Just rest. It's easy to eat into it. Yes, I can do that. There's nothing booked into my calendar. Maybe there should be nothing booked into your calendar so that you don't book anything else in. A plan to do nothing, just to be, to read, to think, to go for a nice walk, to sleep. Setting time aside like this is investing in your future. Moss has found that this principle applies very well when it comes to sleep. A few years ago, you would have found me heading to bed at 9:30 p.m. and Moz would be an hour or a bit longer behind me. I have to go to bed at 9:30 p.m. That's when I turn into a pumpkin. One evening a few years ago now, I came home from work totally fruited at about 7:45. And Moz heated up my dinner and served it to me on the couch. Homemade pizza. Yum. And at first, I didn't want to do anything but watch the box and chill out. But after a little blob time, I was ready to surface, and we both decided to turn off the TV and connect with each other. We talked about the day, how his work went, how mine went, interesting things that happened, interesting things people said. Then we started talking about our plans for the future, little bits and pieces, lovely conversation. Then, in the middle of conversation, Moz looked at me, read my body language, looked at the clock and said, "Yep, it's 9:30, pumpkin time." You see, I need a lot of sleep. About 9.5 hours at night does me beautifully. I'm probably more of a morning person than an evening person. But I'm not the kind of morning person who wakes at 5 a.m. refreshed and happy and ready to start the day. No siree, Barb. I am the kind of morning person who wakes very slowly and becomes an intelligent being by drinking a cup of coffee in bed. I am so incredibly privileged to have a husband who is happy to get up in the morning and bring me a cup of coffee in bed. Perhaps it's because I'm just totally useless without it. Moz used to see me to bed once my brain had stopped functioning. And then he would stay up for around an hour, playing on his computer, learning things, reading articles. And then he would come to bed at 10:30-ish. And here's the thing. Try to immediately fall asleep so that he could get his 8 hours before the alarm went off in the morning. Have you ever tried to immediately fall asleep? It adds a little stress to the scenario. Each 10-minute interval that you're not sleeping is a drama. You know that waiting 10 minutes to get to sleep means you'll want to wake up 10 minutes after the alarm goes off next morning, and you'll therefore wake up groggy and grumpy. When Moz was coming to bed at 10:30, woe betide me if I asked him to head back upstairs to turn the heat pump off or to check if my phone was plugged in. He needed to fall asleep right then, straight away. A little while ago, he decided that this was silly. Now, when pumpkin time hits and I go into the study to say goodnight, he says, "Is it bedtime?" Turns off his computer and heads to bed too. We turn off the light early and he gets his 8 hours. Actually, he's worked out that he needs 7 hours and 50 minutes sleep each night. So he sleeps for 7 hours and 50 minutes and wakes up naturally between 5:30 and 6 a.m. He gets up, heads to the study and does the things that he would have done at night. He plays computer games, reads interesting articles and learns things. At 6:45 a.m. when the alarm goes off, he makes us a cuppa and brings it down to wake me up. He's accomplished something already, and he's had a restful night's sleep. They used to say about daylight saving time that it's daft to cut 1 inch off the top of the blanket and put it on the bottom and say that you have a longer blanket. But it looks like that very strategy has worked for Moz. He's a happier, healthier person because he is investing his time in sleep. I have another friend, Trish, who blocks out an entire month of every year to go on a retreat. She is a minister, and this is her way of investing in her growth and prayer life. She goes away, stops all of her commitments, and spends the month reading, writing, praying, retreating. It's saving, investing in her future. What do? I make sure that I don't block up every time window in my schedule. I make sure that I'm not out in the evenings more than twice a week, and that Sunday evening is kept free, so that I can use it to get my head together for the week ahead. And I only work 4 days a week. I give myself half a day to visit with people, and half a day to be by myself, to do whatever needs doing to rejuvenate. Sometimes that means writing, sometimes reading, sometimes I lie on the couch all day and watch TV. It's time to invest in me. I couldn't always do that, of course. When you have small children, there's not much chance of time alone. Sometimes life circumstances just do not allow the space that you need. But sometimes we bring it on ourselves, the busyness. Is there something in your schedule that you can cut out to allow yourself some time just to be? Is there some time saving that you need to make for your future? When we are feeling energetic, we can budget our time so that every single moment is spent doing worthwhile things. Then, when we start to get tired, we can throw the budget out the window and start to waste time just to feel like we are getting through. But what if the time wasters were actually refreshing, renewing activities that gave us new life? Maybe if we add them to the budget in the first place, we will feel less guilty and more alive. We could schedule in half an hour of Facebook or reading or TV watching and know that it was okay because we'd already thought about it. We are responsible for using our time wisely and giving it carefully. I encourage you again to think about your own time budget. What can you cut out? What can you double up on? For example, Moz and I combine our catch-up time, our chatting about our day, with a walk for exercise. It makes us want to exercise, and it gives us excellent communication as well. What can you limit to once a fortnight or once a month? What do you think about the idea of having an amount of time each week that is set aside to give away? How can you integrate clear spaces so that you are living within your time and energy limits? It is worth the energy and effort to do so. God bless you as you turn your time over to Him. May we all make sure that there's time in our time budgets for prayer and Bible reading, because as we hear God's words and put them into practice, we are like people who build our houses on a rock. God is our firm foundation. He isn't changed. Next week, I am talking to Beth about maintaining connection, believe it or not, even though we recorded in a very different time. Special thanks to Catherine Joy from Joy Music House for the music, and remember that you can subscribe or share this with a friend or send me an email or whatever. I'd love to connect with you, and I will chat to you again next week.